Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, and it is my pleasure to welcome Jerry Wenstrom, author of The Inspired Heart. Jerry is the subject of Parabola and Sentient Publications documentary videos of his life, and today will share his love of the artistic process and his soul journey of spiritual awakening, closely aligned to his love of art and creation. Hi, Jerry.
Hello, Cheryl. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, and I'm very happy to have you here. Jerry, as listeners of Healing From Within are aware, this show brings to the public authors and leaders in the field of transformation, people who have discovered through various life influences the nature of their energetic or soul life and the purpose a physical life offers, which in my belief is to guide us to higher consciousness and to multidimensional healing as we evolve into more conscious and loving human beings. In today's episode, Jerry will show a unique approach to viewing, living and observing the nature of our inner and outer worlds through an artist's love of color, depth, perception, and of a higher unseen component, the energetic process of life, soul, and creation. Jerry, please tell us something of your earlier life. When you decided to be an artist, and what motivated you to take a leap of faith and change your professional direction?
Well, I think I started out as an artist early on. I feel, you know, growing up in a poor, mostly black neighborhood where we were the minority and having very little advantages, it was the one thing I could do and that I got kudos for, you know, all through school. And it was the thing people made the fuss about that I could do. And I think like any kind of anything we identify with, we often run with the ball. And I think later in life is when I finally, you know, let it all go. I had to find out who I was in a deeper level by, you know, I ultimately, as you know from reading my book, destroyed all the art, gave everything I owned away, and lived that way for the next 15 years. But it started out as an identity that, and like any identity, however the world supports it, it can become something of a false god where, you know, we put more into that in finding out who we are in a larger sense.
Yeah, I'm going to say you were probably quite a sensitive child, and being in a situation where you didn't have much, you were able to use your imagination and let it take you to places and thoughts that you could create with the mind, and that later you were able to bring forth in your artwork and into being able to be creative enough and brave enough to go out and search for that inner part of your sensitive self or soul. I was sort of that type of kid also, born not having all that much and taking a while to really find what it was that made me sing with music and words and art and movement. So we were on a search from the very beginning, I would say. Now, let's go on to something else. Did something unusual happen, or did some unusual people early on, before you decided to get rid of your artwork, which was starting to sell and it was being appreciated in the art community, was there some unusual people that you spent time with who precipitated this major change? There are a few friends you talk about in the book that I was very interested in, Gilbert and Lewis. Can you tell us something of that time?
Well, I feel there were many whispers along the way, is what I call them. And certainly the people in my life were somehow, those whispers were coming through those people. But in terms of Gilbert and Lewis, they were two gay men, older men. They were in their 70s when I knew them. They become something of mentors for me. And, you know, Gilbert was an artist, very sort of emotional and creative and very expressive. And Lewis was very inner. And there was something about the two of them that embodied wholeness for me, I think. You know, those the deep inner quality and then this external, you know, wildly expressive personality. And so, you know, I would help them out. They were old. I would help them out and help them around their yard and do things. And then we got
you were very young. You were only in your 20s when you had that experience with them. Yeah.
Yes, early 20s.
I like the way you described they were perfect halves of a perfect circle. They were like yin and yang. They fit emotionally and probably spiritually, and you were very aware of that.
Yes, and I think our generally speaking, that generation was allowed to be almost half beings. You know, if you look at it like our parents' generation, it was okay to be two halves of a whole, but I feel at this time it's, you know, the requirement is that we all become whole within ourselves. I think if there's anything that's going to save the planet, it's going to be a balanced human being who has those aspects, you know, running together.
I agree with you. Yeah, that's multidimensional healing, the spirit, the mind, and the body. And that's, we're in a spiritual evolution right now, and many people are working on themselves, and that's where it begins, when you work on yourself. But you wrote something about Gilbert and Lewis, and I believe it shows a great deal about what you were thinking about at that time. It seems Gilbert was going blind, and he was an artist, and he was frightened by not being able to do his work, I assume. And you said to him, and I believe this was the motivation and impetus for you to actually give up a part of your life so you could find the true value and purpose for existence. And you wrote, "Gilbert, your life is in God's hands. If you can no longer paint or do your art, why don't you just let go of it? Trust what is happening to you. You will be given other ways to be creative. Even if you die, that will be creative. I began to feel that the universe was whispering its truth. I felt and talked about a new kind of freedom. I explored intuitions, but I knew I was not living them out completely. Art began to feel like a trap to me, yet I was afraid to let go of it. After much praying for guidance, I finally was able to destroy what I had created." And Jerry, I think that was your moment of authenticity in your search for this inner reality or soul essence, because it is in essence the authentic journey of the soul to remember we are so much more than our physical identification and process. And you did that at quite an early age.
Yeah, well, finally at age 29 is when I actually destroyed the work. Yes, I mean, I know it was something of an extreme act, but I think whatever it takes to let the gods know we mean business in a sense and, you know, put our lives on the line and commit to finding out, okay, who am I, you know, with no identity at all, do we still exist and who am I? And I think that's where the inner work begins, and also the inner expression of our own true individuality begins to emerge.
Absolutely. It's the mythic journey or the journey of the hero. And we're all the hero in our story. And we're all here having this physical life for the same purpose, to find what you found and what I am finding in a continued opening of our heart, an awareness of courage and faith and trust, which sometimes we don't have as younger people, especially if the conditions of childhood are a little harsh or frightening. It takes time to get beyond those patterns of behavior that have put us into a sort of a stuck pattern, let's say. But let's go on to, can you tell us of your book and the motivating reasons for writing it? Also, what do you wish readers to take away with them after reading the book?
Well, you know, my story is so unusual, and I there was a film, you know, Parabola magazine made a film, and I've been, you know, we toured with them, and so we'd been doing a lot having to do with my story. And so people were very interested in my story, certainly people going through a place where they no longer felt their lives was, their life was serving them in the best way it could. And so in creating, you know, so having it, my story be out there in that kind of way and people being interested, I really got, I was at a point where I was tired of my own story. And, you know, people would often ask the same questions and people would come here and continue to. But I was so tired of the story that I was eventually approached by a publisher. And I know this is unusual because people are looking for publishers.
Yes, you usually have to find an agent first and then a publisher, not the other way around. But somebody found your story interesting. They do sometimes seek out certain people.
Yeah, and then, and she asked if I was willing to write a book. And I, at the time, I didn't even know how to use a computer. So I said, sure, when would you like it? And it felt like the perfect thing, the way to get the story out where I could just let it go. And so it was really, and I was always, I always had a story. You know, if you, you know, recall the book, many of them are stories where all was lost and then something just magical would come through to save the moment, in a sense. And so I always had a story like that for the people who came to me. And so it was a pretty easy download. I mean, I just had to pour the stories out. The book was written in 4 months, and, you know, and I'm not
you
a
just,
writer.
You just had to tell the story exactly as it happened, because probably it was given to you, I feel, by a higher source or divine energy, universal energy, to share with people, to show a journey that's unique, as all our journeys are. But in the interim, you connected spirituality and having a good physical life with your talents and exploring and looking for other ways to develop yourself. Now, isn't that what a human being wants to do? And if they're given the opportunity, would love to do? I think that's what we all need. And some of us are able to do it. We would like to see more people be able to do it. Now, you were originally a painter, but then after giving up painting and art for many years, you went back to art, but you became a sculptor. How did that happen?
Well, I don't really know how it happened. It just sort of did. You know, it's that kind of thing. My bloodline, like my great-grandfather, my grandfather, were machinists and inventors for the, a lot of the industry that was going on in the early years. And I think it's just kind of in the blood, and many of my sculptures are mechanical, and they have secret compartments, and they do funny things, and, you know, dispense gifts or whatever. And so I think somehow the three-dimensional physicality of creating these mechanical, often mechanical sculptures came from the bloodline.
Yes, it was an innate ability. And you wrote, we draw on the family power for strength and we buckle under the weight of the heavy shadow that gets passed on to us. The person out in front who has contributed the most healing and love to evolving the bloodline holds the torch of the lineage. And you talk about your father and how his life mirrored your own. And I was very interested in that. So you just went on to tell your great-grandfather was a success in the field of machinery, and you used it, and you brought it into another creative form. Is there anything else you wanted to say about your father?
About my father? Not necessarily. But if you have a question, I'd be happy to answer it. I mean,
no, it was just that you did mention that we draw from our family issues that are helping us with our creativity. And sometimes we draw some negativity that we have to go beyond. But I don't feel it's random. I feel it's part of what we came here to do as our soul journey. And it's necessary and it's good because it leads us past and into a new understanding of whoever and whatever is in our life, because nothing is bad. It's just an experience and an opportunity for more creation of ourselves as human beings, creative human beings. So we'll go on to something else then. You live, I know, in a very special, which must be a very special place, Whidbey Island, Washington. Just hearing the name, it sounds so magical to me, and it's probably a very beautiful place. Would you want to say something? Is it special? Does it have an area? Is it an area that supports you creatively because of its energy or the people there, perhaps?
Yes, it's a sort of hot spot of creativity, and I might say consciousness. I mean, our land is adjacent to the Whidbey Institute, which was the Chinook Learning Center. You know, and it's a sister community, started out as a sister community to the Findhorn Foundation. So I think a lot has evolved around this place and this island, certainly the south end of the island where we are. And there are many artists, and it's a real creative stir for sure. But it was a real gift coming here.
Mm-hmm. All right. How did you get there? How long have you been there?
I have been here 24 years. And I got here by way of, you know, I had given everything I owned away and trusted life. And at one point, there was this Jewish artist and a Catholic nun who started a gallery, this very successful gallery that got New York Times coverage, in the basement of a convent in New York, Spark Hill, New York. And so I helped with a show, set up a show, and I lived the way I was living. And the nuns that year gave me a little purse full of money, and so I came here to visit a friend and ended up staying.
All divine destiny, I believe, bringing you where you could learn and where you could produce what was good for your soul and good for other people, too. Now, you describe the culminating creative act of destroying your large body of art earlier in your life as very much a death experience. Can you say more about death as an important metaphor for life? Now, I'm an intuitive healer and a medium, and I've done hospice work for 8 years, volunteer work. So I'm very much involved with people going through that process and understanding that it's not really a bad thing, trying to help them understand that it's just another form of creation into new life. So what can you say about that?
Well, when we have to die of an identity or of, you know, something that the ego has latched onto as who we are, it's really indistinguishable from death and can be a literal death, and it can even be harder than literal death. I think that's why people often commit suicide, because they would rather destroy their body than actually go through a radical change that would lead them out of their comfortable identity, you know, separate from their comfortable identity.
Beautifully said.
So, you know, the metaphoric death experience is that thing that we most often, that we most want to avoid. It's the one thing that we don't want to do. And that's often what we get broadsided with, you know, the place where we finally feel comfortable in who we think we are, and there's something larger that's pecking away, and that demands we grow larger. And I think, you know, for that growth to occur, there's a kind of death that has to happen. And the refuge that we've been, you know, the place we have been hiding, whether it's a dysfunctional marriage or a job, or are hiding behind, you know, the power that comes with money or being beautiful, or, you know, go through a divorce, anything. It can be anything at all. I mean, for me, it happened to be being an artist, but I think whatever it takes is the important work of the day.
Well, that's the truth. And actually, most people are more afraid of death than they are of change, as you just said, because they would rather stay in a comfort zone than to venture out. But that's living, when you venture out and you see and do something new and in a new way. But most people will fight that until it's forced upon them one way or another. And I believe sometimes some of the things that happen to us are not random, but coming in just for that purpose, so we can make a change, so we can do something in a new way, and so we can really learn to live. When you give up being afraid of dying or change, you really can begin to live. And you wrote something about your friend Stephen, who sang an amazing song the night the film was shown, the film of your life, and it was called It Must Have Been a Miracle. And you went on to write, Stephen has a beautiful presence and the look of a biblical Jew, being tall, dark, poetic, and fierce. And he sang that night of Moses going up to the mountaintop and bringing down the truth, and about Mary having a baby boy. And it must have been a miracle. Moses broke the tablets, and that baby boy walked into his own death. Nothing seemed to survive. You go on to say you felt like you could cry forever for everything the world could not hold in place. And, you know, Jerry, just a little synchronicity to throw in here for a minute. When I was a little girl, I had a little plastic boy doll, and I called him Jerry. And I didn't know any other Jerrys. Actually, I didn't even know any little boys because there were three sisters in my family. And I talked to him of all the feelings and strange behaviors that I observed around me. Being a sensitive child, I felt the emotions and at times confused behavior of others, and I could not understand their limited view or lack of soul. And in my new book, The Living Spirit, Answers to Healing and Infinite Love, I share stories of my personal interactions and an interest in Moses and Jesus as part of my growing awareness of the oneness and unity of life. So when I read that paragraph, I knew you found something in the stories of the heroes and the leaders long ago and what they was trying to show us, how to find that deep divine essence of spirit within us. And I guess it's not unusual for sensitives, healers, innovators, creators, artists to be interested in knowing these messages of the past. I was very moved by that paragraph, among other things, in your book.
Yes, well, it gets back to the metaphor of death. I mean, in some way, for us to really grow and to go into our full potential, there's a kind of holy defeat, I call it, that has to happen. And I think, you know, that's the sad, there's a sad element to the world, which is the fact that, you know, we think the world's an our oyster when we're young people, and in some way we have to die of that. We have to let go of it and co-create with that larger self. And, you know, there's an incredible beauty that comes in finally accepting that, but there's also a sadness in having to let go of the foolishness of believing we can do what's never been done.
Well, we don't have to do what's never been done. Maybe it's just never been done by us in that moment. And then when we do it, it's a feeling of joy. And that's what we're here, I think, to learn, to actually feel. I think this physical life offers us an opportunity to feel on a deep, deep level. And what could be better, to cry or to laugh? It's all the same. It's all part of living. Now, you describe your interest in reading by autobiographies and biographies, and also you wanted to develop a deeper understanding of the feminine, both in the collective consciousness and in yourself. Can you tell us what you have discovered?
Well, it wasn't just an interest in the feminine. It was more like, I think, you know, like Marion Woodman says, she's a famous Jungian, she says, you know, quote, the second coming will be the emergence of the feminine spirit. And I think the patriarch in a certain way has run its course, and there is that emergent feminine. So it's not an idea or something to be explored. I believe it's a requirement of our day, where men and women have to fully embrace the feminine. It's coming through in a way that's creating balance. And the place it has to begin is within ourselves, whether you're a man or a woman. It gets back to what we were saying earlier about being two halves of a whole, like with Gilbert and Lewis. You know, that's no longer working for many of us. I think that's why there's so many divorces. You know, we expect that to hold, and it doesn't anymore. So that interest in the feminine wasn't just an idea. I think it is, and so I was open to what was coming through and gave myself to it fully.
Well, you know, Jerry, you're right. It's not just an idea. What it really is about energy. Every human being has male and female energy. and interests. And when you merge that, just like when you merge your spiritual and physical life, you ultimately can bring the best aspects of both and be completed. And that's what you're saying here. And as an energy healer, when I do Reiki with people, I help them to feel their own source or life force, and to perceive things perhaps in a different way through those feelings, and they become more aware that they don't have to see things as black and white or good or bad. It just is, and it's just experience that we're gathering, which I believe that we take with us ultimately beyond this time and place and space and into other life. But you wrote or said in the book, Yolanda said, "In God's eyes, we are all feminine. Men have such a difficult time because they can't let go of control. But actually, it's happening now. People are willing to let other people show them different processes and ways to do things. And we all want to be at peace and we want to have love in our life. And I think it all boils down to acceptance, first of ourselves, then of other people. And then helping other people if they ask for it and need, you know, a little feminine or male energy, whatever it is that's necessary at the moment. I want to thank you, Jerry Wenstrom, for joining me on Healing From Within and for delivering to the world through the written words in your book, The Inspired Heart, as well as through the vision of your artistic eye, a view of transformation, and also for sharing your fantastically courageous journey in search of the magnificence and divine within yourself, which is a true reflection of our soul's beauty. I highly recommend this creative, verbally beautiful book, and to purchase The Inspired Heart, go to handsofalchemy.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, Jerry has shown that he lost nothing when he changed from one form of creation, giving up one body of artwork for another, investing in the development of his complete inner growth. Nothing was lost, but something invaluable was found when Jerry, as indeed each of us at times, allows our hungry heart to search for our true passion, which is, I believe, for many, to become the most dynamic, truthful, and open-minded self, reaching beyond time and space to the infinite possibilities of delight in the seen and unseen worlds of energy and life. Jerry writes, "When the gift of the inspired heart is given, there is no longer a separation between art and any other aspect of our lives. We come full circle when we are fully attentive to everything in our lives. There can be no identified fixed priority, only the requirements of each given moment. We can no longer say, 'I am an artist,' or 'I am a theologian,' or 'I am an anything,' separate from the alluring whole of the heart's inspiration with all its possibilities intact. When we fix our gaze abstractly on the whole, all action and non-action have the potential to support what is holy and creative. High art becomes the art of all things, of whispers from God in all directions. Art is as good a way as any to express the whisper, yet art is not defined as separate from any other expression of creation. What is important is not the particular form of creation, but the completed circle as the premise for right action in the world. We become with those we are connected to, the inspired heart of creation itself." Thank you, Jerry. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, and invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, where you can listen to the higher vibrational wisdom leaders in the fields of art, spirituality, music, alternative healing modalities, science, and our continued search for higher consciousness for an improved world community. Also, go to WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you.